So shall we start? Please open your Blackboard page and then check the exercises file. It should be under week 43, I guess. So Arbeitskraft. Week 43. Risk management exercises. Please check this one. So we will start with the first exercise. So let's assume we have an organization, we're part of an organization, we're part of the IT staff, or depending on the structure of the risk or of the operation staff, whatever. And we are part of a team that's going to decide about the risk management process in the following period, and then we have several cases. For example, we have from the first exercise, we have case A, we have a switch connecting to the internet, and it seems there are two vulnerabilities. First of all, there is something like a hardware failure, which could happen at a likelihood of 0.2, right? So we have hardware failure, likelihood 0.2, and then we have a buffer overflow attack. With a likelihood of 0.1, right? Then we also know that the switch has an impact rating of 90. And then we also take note of this. Impact of 90. And there's also this percentage, which is like 75% of certainty for all these values above, right? So in this case, we have an uncertainty of 25%. Right? said 25, so 25. Now, according to these values, we should be able to assess what is the current need for control based on the values that we have. And how do we do this? We use what we have, we multiply these values, and then we see what is the related final value. So we have likelihood 0.2 and 0.1. We have impact rating 90 and a certain level of 25. According to the formula that was given in the risk lecture, I can also share it now. We can determine the overall value of risk by having values from the loss frequency and from the loss magnitude part, right? Now what we have is the likelihood and also the impact rating. The impact rating can be associated to the loss magnitude because we cannot, of course, associate it to the loss frequency. And then the likelihood can be associated to the loss frequency. So we don't have the percentage of success. But we can assume it is 1, right? Because we don't have it. And then for the impact rating, we might assume this is a product of both these values. So usually this is more related to the asset value, but then, so we might also say in this case that the probable loss is also 100% or 1, right? So if there is an attack, we will lose all the value of the asset that we are assessing right now. So we need to multiply some values, and then since we have two different threats, we just add them. So it should be like this: 0.2 plus 0.1 as the overall likelihood, and then this and then we assume for both of these attacks attack success is 1, probability is 1. So it's like it can happen once a year. And then we multiply this by the value of the impact that we have. And this is frequency times magnitude. And then we should also have add the uncertainty. In this case, it's 0.25 or 25%, which usually is, as also mentioned in the cases that we had in the lecture, usually is multiplied. So it's like multiplying the value here by 1.25. Okay? So we have 0.3 multiplied by 90 by 1.25, and this should be 27, 1.25, 33.75. So in a scale from 1 or from 0, if you like, from 0 to 100, the first option has a risk-related value of 33, almost 34. Okay. B. Now we have a server which hosts the company's website and performs e-commerce transactions. It might be attacked from invalid Unicode values, invalid input. So the attack will be invalid input. Invalid input values. And then the likelihood would be like 0.1. And the impact, it says the server has been assigned an impact value of 100. So it's like very important. But then, because of a control that has been implanted, the impact value has been decreased by 75%, right? So let's say impact 1 is 100, then impact 2 is what? After the control, reduced by 75%, which means it's left to 25, right? So 75% of 100 is 75, 100 minus 75, 25. And that's the impact value that we are using in the calculation. And then further on, the certainty level is 80%. And this means that the uncertainty is what? 20, right? So we have the values now, then we can use them. It's 0.1. Times 25, which is the impact rating, and that's multiplied by the rate of, let's also include the rate of uncertainty, multiplied by 1.2. Actually, to be on the safe side, since this is 20% and 20% is a fourth, it might be this value here 1.25 and this value here 1.3, okay? But then the result will be almost similar, but just to be correct, okay? So here we have 1.3 or 33 if you wish. Because it's like 100 divided by 75, right? And that's it. And then here you have 100 divided by 80, which is like the rate of certainty in this case, and it should be 1.25, okay? Just to be on the safe side. And then the value here should be like 35 something. Here, we have 2.5. You will see this will not affect the final answer to that anyway. 2.5 times 1.25, which is like 3.1. Yeah. So we have 30 plus, and here we have 3. This is option B. Okay? And then we go to option C. We have a control console monitoring operations in the server room. This is this has no password, so it might be vulnerable to any misuse from the operator. But still, the estimates are like this. So the likelihood is like for this misuse is like 0.1. So misuse. Likelihood 0.1. Then we have no control, so the impact is the same as it was valued in the beginning, which is like 5, again very low. Impact 5. And then certainty, the certainty level is 90, which means that the uncertainty should be like 10%. And then we use this to calculate the value. Then we have 0.1 times 5. Multiply by 1.1, right? Because it's 100 divided by 90. 1.1. And this is altogether 0.55. So we have 33, 34, we have 3 and 0.55 as final values. Now the question is, if we were to evaluate which ones of these vulnerabilities should be treated first, right? Which would be that? A, because the value is the biggest one, right? And then with the same reasoning, which should be treated last? The one which has the least value, which is C, okay? The server misuse, whatever. The console misuse, C. This is the first example. Shall we move on to the second? We have a table. Let's say we have a company that has these values assigned to the different threats that might occur to the company while they have this project, a new application development project. Now, the question is, once we have these values, can we calculate those terms, ARO and ALE? I will clarify this right away now. So the table shows us the different threat categories. cost per incident for each of them, which is also called SLD. And I guess, and this was part of the lecture on risk management. So we, this is else known as single loss expectancy, which is what the average value, expected value of a single attack per a device or whatever might be. And then we have the frequency of occurrence, which is like how many times, how frequent this, any of these events might be, any of these threats. Then we have ARO, which is again, which was again stated in the lecture. If you want, I can find it. It's similar to calculating loss frequency. So we might calculate loss frequency, or we might say we are calculating the ARO, annualized rate of occurrence. So in this case, in the table that we have there, we are just trying to calculate the loss frequency. And then ALE, this was not mentioned in the lecture, but it should be simple if you know that ALE is equal to multiplying both the values above. So we have annualized rate of occurrence, which is loss frequency. We have single loss expectancy, which sometimes refers to loss magnitude. And when we multiply both of them, we have annualized loss expectancy, which is another term for assessing risk. Okay? So we have the risk formula from the lecture, and we have this, which is like almost identical. Right? So from the table, the column here will help you calculate the annualized rate of occurrence, ARO, loss frequency. The column here is already given for the single loss expectancy, which is again similar to the loss magnitude part. And then if we multiply both of them, we have the ALE, which is the annualized loss expectancy, which is the overall value expected to be lost during a single year for a certain event to a certain device or whatever. Okay? So, we might take some examples here, and then you should be able to fill out the rest. So let's start with the programmer mistake. I'm calling it 2A. We have the SLE equal to 5,000. And the ARO, which is the annualized rate of occurrence. In this case, it's assumed that we have one attack, one mistake event happening per week. How would it be translated into a year? One per week. We have 52 weeks, so we have 52 events per year. So the annualized the ARO, the annualized rate of occurrence, is 52. Right? And then if we multiply them, we have the ALE, the annualized loss expectancy. And that's like 260,000 based on the values that we have. The second one is easy, I would say, because we have an SLE of 75,000 and the frequency is 1 per year. So what would be the translated ARO? It would still be 1 because we have just 1 per year. So it's the same as the SLE, 75,000. Then the third one, software piracy. SLE 2500. Frequency of occurrence once per week. Then this is the same like above. ARO 52. And we have something like ALE, it should be like 130,000, right? Half of it. Okay, I missed. Yeah. SLE is 500. Then, okay, I'm going one by one just in case there are different types. So, for example, the fourth one is frequency of occurrence once per quarter. What does it mean in yearly?
Four
per year. So we multiply 4 by 2,500 and we get the value for the ALE. Then it's once per 6 months, 2 per year, right? Then it's again once per month, web defacement. That's like 12, right? And then we go below, once per year, it's okay, once per week, 52, once per quarter, 4, once per 20 years, it's an earthquake and it's like 0.05, right? Or once per 10 years, flood or fire, this is 0.1. So depending on this, you should be able to calculate the annualized rate of occurrence, and then from that you can calculate the whole value of the annualized loss expectancy, because you have this other column of the single loss expectancy value. So, how many attacks we have per year, how many events, this is multiplied by the average value, the cost that's related to a single event per year. And so, that's how we get the whole value for a year for a certain event. This was the solution to the second exercise. Anything that needs to be clarified again so far? Okay. Third exercise, or question in this case. Then we see all these values. So we see the single loss expectancy value, we see the frequency of occurrence, and also we saw the likelihood and all those other stuff. How should we get this information? Where can we find this information, right? What could be the process behind this? How can this software company arrive at these values? So how can they understand, or how can they define that a single programmer mistake should cost them like $5,000 on average? They're a software company, right? And then how can they define that it happens only once per week? And not twice, or maybe a bit more rare. Yes, so this is a software company, so it should be relatively simple for them to define some of these threats and events and associate them with typical values. So in this case, they could use their own experience from the past years. If they're a new company, a startup company that just started like a few months ago, then they should use the experience from the industry. So, from all the software companies that are like competing with them, they might understand that these events are like rare or like very often, and then on average this happens this much, and this other event happens that much, and yeah. So it's usually based on their own experience, the industry. It might also be based on other data from these research reports, research institutes, insurance companies, because we are having more and more insurance companies that are providing cyber insurance, so it should be relevant to all the companies to get some information. And then this is like how they get this information. And then on the earthquake, cloud, fire, of course, is like history, and of course it's like more not only related to cyber insurance, but also like a bit beyond that. So it should be also related to all kinds of industry, local companies, and so on. Then they might also use some surveys. For example, they might ask their employees, have you had these events? Have you had these issues so far? How often were they? And so on. So they might have this overall assessment. Yeah. This is all part of the risk management process. And then we go to the fourth exercise. Yeah. So let's assume now that we have, maybe we can have a new table, because now the company has already revised everything that they had in the first table. And a year has passed, and there were some controls, some countermeasures, some trainings, whatever, to improve their level of security. So now the question is, first of all, how have the values changed? So we have, if we have a new value for and the average cost per incident, then this is like the new SLE, right? And then if we have a new value for the frequency of occurrence, this is the new ARO, and so on. So if we take, for example, programming mistakes, because there has been a training for all the programming, for all the programmers that are part of this company, it seems that the frequency of occurrence has decreased from once per week to once per month, right? The first line. So it has really decreased. Because it was 52 and now it's what? 12, right? Once per month. And then you can see there the loss of intellectual property. It was, for example, once per year, and it's now once per 2 years, so it's like 0.5, right? So from 1 to 0.5, and so on. And there are also some other cases where you have also changes in the cost per incident. So, for example, we can take, I think, fire, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, both flood and fire. They were, if you can look at this, they were like 250,000 and 500,000 respectively. And then now they are 50,000 and 100,000. So they are like reduced by something like 80%. And that's good. But on the other side, their frequency of occurrence hasn't changed. Why is that? Because we're talking about natural phenomena, right? So we cannot control everything. We can reduce the cost, but we cannot control its occurrence because it depends on other things that are outside the company's environment. And so on. So the exercise here looks for potential measures that have been successful. And with successful measures, we should understand how have the costs changed, or the expected costs changed from the first period to the second period. So let's say, let's take the example of the programming mistakes. Has the training improved the total expected costs? In order to do this, we should apply a new approach, which is known as CBA. Which is a short form for cost-benefit analysis. So we are just trying to analyze the costs and the benefits from each strategy, each initiative we take, right? In this case, we should assess the costs and the benefits from each of these measures. So for the programming mistakes, we have training, which costs 20,000. And I'm putting here CC, which means control costs of 20,000. Then we have the initial loss expectancy, which was 260,000. And we have the new one, which is after this type of control was made, which is related to the value that we have now here. So it's 5,000 multiplied by the new frequency. Now it's once per month or 12 times per year. So it's 60,000. In this case, the measure or the control would be successful if the overall costs have been reduced. And how do we measure that? We just reduce the costs from the initial ones. We reduce the control costs and the second ALE. So the formula should be like ALE1 or prior minus ALE2 minus control cost. And this is the usual formula for the cost-benefit analysis. And once we have this, then we can see how did this approach succeed. In the first case, we have 260 minus 60 minus 20. I'm just getting rid of the thousands. Then this means that we have 180,000. Okay? 180 is, of course, higher than zero. So in this case, the costs have been reduced. And this is a good approach. We should train our programmers, because then we know that this helps them and this helps the company to have less costs expected for any mistakes they might make. Right? But let's take another example. Let's take theft of information from hackers. In the first table, it was once per quarter and 2,500. So this is D. Control costs were like 15,000 from the second table, since we're doing the same. Yeah. Control costs, fourth line, 15,000. The first period ALE, annualized loss expectancy, was calculated. I'm not sure if we did it before. 2,500 multiplied by 4 once per quarter, 10,000. The second period ALE, after the control approach, which was what? In the case of the hacking issue, it was a firewall. So they implemented a firewall whose cost was 15,000 in order to reduce the expected costs of an attack from the hacker. And in this case, the ALE2 was 2,500 multiplied by 2. Because we have one attack per 6 months, twice per year. And this is 5. So now we have 10,000, which was the initial loss expectancy, minus 5,000, which was a reduced loss expectancy because of the control, and then minus what? The control cost, which were like 15,000. And the total value should be like minus 10,000. We have a negative value, which means that the control costs are higher than the cost we would, or than the benefit we would have from this control. So this means that we should not do this. We should not buy this firewall, or at least we should not have bought it, because now it's after this. So we should not have bought this firewall or this IDS, whatever, because it costs more money to have it than to just skip it, maybe. Right? And then you have all the other cases there. So I think it should be okay. If you want, we can take another example. Is it? Do you want? I'm not sure what's happening with the screen. Maybe one of these tables. So we have these other examples here. You can see how the values change, and then you can define, for example, that the third one was not a good approach, the fifth one was a good approach, and so on. Based on the values there, if they're positive, then it's a worthy approach or control. If it's not positive, then it's not worthy. If it's zero, which I doubt, if it's zero, then yeah, I think you might also consider it, as long as it's not negative anyway. So yeah, these were the types of exercises that I think should be relevant for the risk management part. You should have a similar exercise with one of these in the exam, so it should be relevant. So that's why I'm asking if you need more examples or something else, or if you need something that we should clarify further. And I would also like to state here that this is not the only way how you can evaluate the risk, right? Because especially when you buy this firewall, or when you buy insurance or whatever, you are not expecting all the benefits to be to appear in the first year, right? So you should expect the benefits to be appearing in a longer period. And then you should also imply other techniques and other approaches. But this is just a simple way how to define this, and I think it's good enough for you for this course, for this stage. Okay? Usually this is like related to what they call the investment value in time. So it's like you are buying something and you are expecting that that should be profitable for you in the next 4, 5, or maybe 10 years, right? And in this case, it seems that in the first year it was not profitable. But if we are able to calculate values year after year after year, then we might end up sometimes in a good result. But that's why I'm saying that this is just one of the approaches, and not the only one, and not maybe the best one, but it's one of the it's one of them. So yeah. I guess this was the main part for our class today. This is also recorded, so if you need, you can also go back to this and see the exercises and whatever. And then, as related to the lecture from this week, as I announced yesterday, there are at least two other lectures from my colleagues here in Jövik, which I was not able to bring them here, I guess. And so there will be some recordings of these lectures available to you. I think one of them is already available, the IDM, the authentication lecture. And that's for the next week, actually. Anyway, there were these lectures, and I will make it possible for you to access them as soon as possible. So we are talking about the legal and ethical aspects, right? I'm sorry, I have. Legal and ethical aspects. I have already another lecture regarding legal aspects, and there are some online videos that you might be able to access. You need to create a user account first, and then you can be accessing everything there. It's an online course, and it was specifically targeting students in that are having courses in ethics and cybersecurity, so it should be good for you. And then legal aspects, there should be another recording which I will make available for you in the next few days. And that should be also along with the materials. So you will have this, and we are not going to have any other materials or lectures about this part, so that's all. Next week, week 46, we're going to talk about future developments. So any topics that are like related or maybe partially related to cybersecurity at this stage, but that might be relevant in the next few months or in the next few years. Also something that should be relevant for you as a part of this program, as students in NTNU and students in Jovik, what could be there waiting for you when you finish these studies and so on. And then we shall maybe make use of the remaining time next week to discuss and finish with that assignment that I mentioned before, with the Belvin test assignment. I will provide more information if needed in an announcement in Blackboard. And that should be it. There could be one or two other assignments that might be discussed and shared in class. And that should be the plan for next week. And then in week 47, we will have the final summary of the course. I guess Eric will also be here and try to summarize all the topics that were discussed and maybe have more like a question and answer session than a typical lecture. Yeah, that's all. Not sure if you have anything else. Then you're free to go on with other activities, or if you want to start with the Belvin test, just the assignment, just let me know, and then I can maybe explain you further stuff.